Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
This is episode 158. Top of the day, Tom.
Hello.
What is going on?
We're here. We're going to talk about some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's hot, but not as hot as it was the other day.
It's a bit humid, but now we're officially in summer because this is December now.
Yeah, and it's weird because I've got American friends going like, wow, it's snowing. I'm like, that sucks shit.
That's the opposite.
Yep, we're bushfire season kicking off here. You got your preparation plans ready, everybody?
I hope so. If not, please go to the website.
Yep. And
the website called Google and type in.
I thought fire was going to be more of a concern as it, when I was young, because like they really hammered stop, drop, and roll. All right, I've never ever had to stop, drop, and roll yet.
Isn't that great that you haven't?
I know, but God, I thought it would be a bigger thing.
Mm.
John Mulaney has a joke about how he thought quicksand would be a bigger thing when he was a kid.
Yeah.
He thought quicksand would be a real thing.
It's
when
in
he was
everything.
Older. Yeah.
No.
But like, and I think the Australian equivalent of that is being on fire.
Yeah, I think so. A quick detour back to the John Mulaney thing.
Mm.
He got that Seth Meyers gig, right?
Yes.
It's funny, I can't think of the podcast I was listening to, but they were talking about how suddenly they're quite enjoying Seth Meyers' show again. And they said, oh, I don't know, maybe they've got new writers or something, but it's really funny.
There it is.
And that's it. And I was like, I know, but I'm not going to. It was a YouTube podcast, and I'm not touching the comments.
Sure. I think a comedy writer and a comedy performer can be very different things.
Mm.
And if you're the one person out performing all the stuff, all your writers are writing for your voice.
Mm.
So it might be that John is either writing for his own voice and giving it off, or he's just really good at writing for Seth.
Or both? Could you be
both?
Could
be both, yeah. Yeah, but it would be both. Bit of column A.
Yeah.
Column B.
Bit of column A, column B.
Mm.
Greetings, subscribers and members of the Watchersville latest newsletter. Home gardeners are being reminded to be mindful of their outdoor Christmas lights when pruning hedges and bushes. Once you snip through that cable, it's dead. You're then going to have to unravel them from all your plants, run back up to Festivals or Us, and hope they haven't sold out of the Clark W. Griswold twinkling bulbs. So before you pick up the secateurs, take note and don't prune after dark. We know you can see the lights better at night, but there's a lot of things you can't. The annual Dog Tree Wee Festival is on again this weekend at the Big Watching Park. You still have time to register your woof machine so they can take part in all of the fun. There will be the ever-popular leg lifting competition, overzealous sniffing time trial, and a new category this year, urinating on two legs. It should be a wonderful day for all canines and humans. If you're interested in tapping into your artistic side, the local art studios are holding a drink coaster painting workshop. Teacher Janice Petrie says it's totally up to your interpretation as to whether you paint a design or picture on your coasters or just grab a canvas and paint a still life of drink sitting on them. Ah, the freedom of artistic expression. That's it for now. Stay safe and happy, all residents of Watchersville.
Good quiz this week.
Oh, good.
It's not Christmas related, but
good.
It's got the air of, you know how Christmas is a bit magical?
Yes.
It's that kind of thing.
Sure.
I can't, obviously can't give too much away, just in case you figure it all out too early.
Mm. Well, look, I'm going to kick off some news.
Yeah, go on.
That you've been you set it up there of Christmas related news.
Mm.
Something that I'm going to be watching later this week.
What's that then?
Shay is in the school nativity play. She's playing Mary, which is hilarious because on orientation day before she started kindy, we saw the nativity play, and she, at the end of it, she was like, "I'm going to be Mary when I'm in year 2."
Amazing.
And she is. So, thanks to COVID, we get to watch it as a live stream.
Oh, okay.
Or some of it's been pre-recorded, or something. I don't know. We sit down and we watch like a conference thing.
So I assume if they're going to be doing that, they'll also be recording it so that all the kids can watch back their performances.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
I think so. And I think we're able to access it for a while and stuff.
Awesome.
So I don't know. If you're listening and you want to see Shay's nativity, maybe hit me up for a link.
But what I like about that, I think the real story there is that she is someone who decides on something and then gets it done.
That is like dream board shit right there.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Have you been watching some of the rehearsals? Has she been sort of going through her lines and whatnot?
No, she's very secretive with
really?
It.
Really?
Yes. I was allowed to run lines with her at the beginning
mm-hmm.
and then no more since then. Once costumes started happening, then it was not, you're not allowed to see until
right.
the end.
Okay. Fair enough.
Mm.
What a performance you're in for.
I know. And there was an article that went around earlier this year that correlated who you were in the nativity play as, and then went through to show what sort of careers and how much you ended up earning.
Oh, yeah.
And Mary's always top dog.
She does right?
Yep. It's a personal best for my extended family because I was a Christmas tree.
Oh, yep.
We've had several shepherds.
I think I was an angel, not ooh. The angel. The one, you know, one
part
of the kids.
Choral.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Didn't really have to do much.
Did you have to wear fancy raiment or whatever?
A white sheet.
Yeah.
And some tinsel.
Nice.
I'm trying to think what Steph, because Steph, I think she might have been the top fairy. The star. She was the star, the northern star, which looked exactly like the angels, but with gold tinsel on top of head.
Sure.
But as a Christmas tree, you would have had a whole heap of tinsel.
I think I was just buried.
So you were the Christmas tree at about the 6th of January.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. It was way down there. But that was in preschool,
yeah.
Maybe kindergarten. I don't know.
Yeah, it was preschool for me. Yeah, it was very exciting. And that's all I just remember. It was exciting. Don't remember anything else about it. I know I didn't have anything to do. I had no lines, not like Shay. She's got lines.
She's only got lines. She comes home. I picked her up the other day. She was in a foul mood. And I said, "What's wrong?" And she's like, "Ugh, no one knew they're blocking."
Oh my goodness,
she's like,
that's amazing.
The shepherds kept standing in front of me. And it's like, I'm Mary and I'm holding baby Jesus. Everyone needs to see that the baby is born.
They need to see. They do. Oh, my gosh. She was born to be Mary pretty much.
Yep.
That's amazing. When is the premiere?
Tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to give us a rundown next week.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
Brilliant.
I'll let everyone know whether Jesus was successfully born in the inn.
I can't wait to find out.
Imagine if they did a fucking remix of Christmas.
Reboot.
Yep. And maybe they don't have to go on a journey. Maybe there's plenty of room in hotels.
Airbnb, just got a whole house.
Maybe there'll be some hints of corona in the storyline this year.
Mm.
They have to stay relevant. In the inn because there's too many people in the hotel.
See, this is why you should have been the script consultant.
Three well spread apart wise men.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, wow. I'm so excited about this. I hope I can watch a little bit.
I'm sure we can find a way.
Fantastic. Now, I know that you had that news, but
yeah.
I want to talk about, we will obviously be talking about Mandalorian later,
oh, yeah.
But I've got a cool story about how you should check your DMs or that email address that you give people and then you forget that you've given them.
Right.
That email address. Because Sasha Banks, who is in, so she's one of the what was she? She was a Mandalorian?
She was.
That's right. The third one that didn't really speak.
Yeah, one of Bo-Katan's crew.
That's right. So she got the role through Instagram.
Sure.
She said she never looks at her DMs, which you can imagine. Like, if you're someone.
She's a wrestler.
So you can imagine she's got quite a following.
Shit. Yeah, but she copped plenty of shit. Because that's what wrestlers do. They're supposed to be divisive figures.
Okay.
They're always, you know, I told you before, babyface and heel.
Mm.
A wrestler's job is to rile up the crowd. So they always cop a lot of shit
sure.
on social. And it's not genuinely attacking them, but it's part of that kayfabe
world. People
are
all part of the play.
Yes.
I guess we'd call it. Well, she actually went into her DMs and had a look, and the casting director for Mandalorian said, "Jon Favreau really wants to interview you for something on Disney." And she went, "All right."
Righto.
So I got had a FaceTime interview with him, and he told her all about the Mandalorian, you know, the role that she would be having, and she was like, "I couldn't believe it. At the click of my fingers, I was suddenly on a set and shooting Mandalorian." That's pretty cool.
That's very cool.
So maybe sometimes you should check that email address or.
Yeah, yeah.
Your
On the flip side, I had someone sent me a DM today that I haven't spoken to this person in about 13 years. I was like, oh, opened it up. That's definitely they've been fished.
Oh, what a shame. That sucks.
It's the flip of that.
Yeah, be aware.
The podcast that believes in pyramids of greatness. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
So we got very excited this morning because there's a new video and some photographs from the Super Nintendo World at Universal Japan. And they've announced that February 4th of 2021 is their opening date, which is only
That's so soon.
Like 2 months.
It's unbelievably soon.
Yeah. So they were showing off what looked like the Mario Kart vehicles and also the exterior of Bowser's Castle or the Koopa Challenge, I think it's called, or something like that.
Mm. If you're not that aware of Mario, it looked like
a level.
A level of Mario, you know, the green grass and all
yeah,
that kind of stuff.
Like it looks like Super Mario Brothers 2.
So you sent me the photograph first and then we watched a video.
Yeah.
And I was like, my brain doesn't know how to compute this because they have made it, like in real life, they have made it look so much like a video game. Yet there's people and there's a real, you know, bush and plant and hedges and you're like, I don't understand what I'm looking at.
I need to see more, but what I said to you straight away was there's a weird uncanny valley thing going on.
Yeah, for sure.
It looks too real in the way that Zemeckis is definitely guilty of it with like Polar Express and those movies where it's too close to being human but not quite human. And I was reading an interesting thing about the other day of why we dislike that so much. It triggers our fear, a very subliminal, deep, you know, ancestral fear of things that look too much like us because we wiped out all the other hominids.
Wow, okay.
You know, there was an extinction level event that occurred across the earth of, you know, because there were like 9 other hominids or some humanoids walking around and we murdered them all.
The bastards.
Yeah. So apparently that's why we dislike things that look too close to us.
Isn't that funny?
So it's weird that I'm getting that same sense from a 2D.
But a thing that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So they have made something that exists to look like something that doesn't exist, but we know the thing that doesn't exist. Therefore, when we're shown it as something that does exist, we're like,
I have a feeling that there's going to be a few spots that they clearly mark with like photography spots or something that are the peak viewing angles in there to see it two-dimensionally.
Yeah.
And that's when, like, that moment will be when it fully clicks and you're like, oh, wow, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
And then you walk a little bit further around a corner and you're like, oh, I'm thrown again.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting clever. For Japan.
Yeah.
But there was some exciting news for Sydney as well.
Really?
Yes. Luna Park made some big announcements on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
They're investing a lot of money and getting quite a few new family-friendly rides and basically revamping the back section. And I think they're going to be removing a lot of what we'll call carnival rides, stuff that, you know, you can put on the back of a trailer and move around. And they're going to be putting in more permanent stuff. But the one that's more exciting is they are building a roller coaster, not a kiddie coaster. They're saying it's a world first inline, which means sitting one per row.
Yep.
Behind each other like a log flume ride or something like that.
Sure.
It's a launched coaster. It stays very close to the ground or like goes up the side of buildings and things,
ooh,
which is going to really help with the noise reduction.
That's what I was waiting to comment about that because I remember there was a lot of kerfuffle with residents.
That's right. They used to have the Big Dipper back in the day and it bothered a lot of people for two reasons. One was the sound concerns and fuck you, Luna Park's older than anyone alive.
Exactly.
You knew what you were getting into.
You moved there knowing Luna Park was there.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then secondly, it was bright yellow and it went up high. And so it changed the look of the shoreline. When you were coming across the Harbour Bridge, you would see this bright yellow thing. And so this one, it's going to be red. It'd still be noticeable, but because it's much lower and hugs things, it won't change the look of the shoreline, which is apparently another big thing they had to get approval on.
Okay, interesting.
But that's pretty cool. So they've announced that. Dreamworld is showing off an animatic of the coaster that they're planning to build next year. You know, they're saying they're pushing ahead. I don't know where they're still getting any money from.
Mm.
I love Dreamworld, but like they've had
some problems.
They haven't turned a profit since those people died.
Yep.
And they won't.
That was a couple of years ago now. Yeah.
Yep. So that's all. SeaWorld's got new stuff. They've got things being built at the moment. I believe their drop tower thing is opening soon. There's a big. I'm really excited. A really big wooden roller coaster coming to SeaWorld.
Ah, right.
Which is very brave, building a wooden roller coaster next to the ocean.
Yeah, that's true. So why are they doing that? What's the? I mean, for me, as someone who isn't a roller coaster aficionado, I would be like, oh, that sounds retro. Like they're trying to make it look like.
That is exactly ones of old. That is exactly the reason why okay. is because there is no wooden roller coaster on the Gold Coast at the moment.
Okay.
And it is a real point of difference to have one. And sure. they handle differently.
Okay. In what way?
Steel coasters are all about being it's meant to be a smooth ride.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a wooden roller coaster has given and there's a little bit more sway to the coaster.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels more old school, as you say, it feels more retro. But it rattles. It gives a rattle that you can't get from a steel coaster, and it's just a different experience. So you might remember that Wonderland used to have the Bush Beast and the Beastie, the two big wooden coasters there. You know, we haven't had great wooden roller coasters pretty much since they left,
mm-hmm.
and up on Gold Coast has been a long time. But when I was in the States, even 10 years ago, I went to Six Flags Magic Mountain and they had, at the time, it was themed to Terminator Salvation, I think it was, or something, one of the Terminator movies. But a wooden roller coaster, which you wouldn't equate with Terminator. You'd think it would be a steel thing.
Yeah.
But it was the rattle.
That's why they, yeah, okay.
Yep.
Unnerve you a little.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I know that was a long explanation to get to the point of why I think it's cool, but... it's going to be huge, not as big as like the some of the steel coasters and stuff like the one at Movie World and things, but that's not what they're going for. This isn't to be the highest or the fastest. This is to be the rattliest.
The rattliest and the woodenest.
Yep. And cool. this it will feel haphazard.
So when are they sort of looking at, or have they not really said when?
So originally there was to be three new rides opening at SeaWorld. One was going to open in like March this year, earlier than, or maybe even earlier, and there was a bit of pushback over the summer, and so things got delayed a little bit, mm-hmm. and then COVID happened and this sort of stuff. So they've got a drop tower, like Space Probe 7 sort of thing. You pick up high, stay up there, poof, drop down.
Do you remember that was in Zombieland?
I do. I love
that. Funny.
This one, it might have chairs that spin.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly what it was. Then they've got another one. There was a ride at Dreamworld for many years called Wipeout, which was the surfboard, two things at either end, and it twisted, went upside down and this sort of stuff. Dreamworld lost Wipeout a few years ago. A lot of upkeep on that ride.
Right,
and they didn't maintain it as well. As they poured a lot of money in trying to bring it back and it didn't come back. So when they got rid of it, SeaWorld was like, we'll build one of them.
Mm.
Perfect. People love that. And then they've got the wooden roller coaster. So that second ride should be later, so maybe mid next year or something like that. And then the wooden roller coaster may be this time next year.
Cool.
Which would be very cool.
Yeah, heaps going on.
Yes.
And also that's the kind of amusement park that you can go to at the moment.
Exactly. So I know that's not
country.
I know that's not film or TV watching news, but that's something I am watching closely because I am struggling.
Yeah.
I'm really struggling. I need a roller coaster quite badly.
Yeah. It's funny. I was scrolling through photos earlier today, actually, and I was like, oh, there's Tom at Magic Mountain on one of your, you know, photos that you posed for.
Yep.
I was like, that feels like ages ago.
Yep. Every day Facebook, well, not every day, but a lot of Facebook memory things are served up like, hey, you were at this theme park 5 years ago today. You were here. And it's, yeah, I know.
Now I'm not. Yeah.
For a visual representation of this audio, check out the Watchers podcast on Instagram.
We've got a bit of Walking Dead news, just a little bit, just a quick casting thing. Annette Mahendru, who plays Huck in World Beyond, Walking Dead World Beyond, has just been cast in a horror indie movie called Grow. It's got a wild synopsis. I'm just going to read it word for word to
Far away.
It's about a guy who's imprisoned and impregnated by a group of cult members with an archaic belief system. It's an examination of gender flipping conventional stereotypes, and she plays twins, Kitty and LaCasta, I think, and that's all I know about her part at the moment. But I reckon it's giving me Junior vibes, Arnold Schwarzenegger Junior vibes, but scary.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's going to be a film that guys don't watch. I feel pretty confident that's a one for the ladies.
I think it's going to be, yeah, like an off-putting thing. I can see her twins, like her cast, her characters, I should say, are going to be, I don't think you'll ever really know which one's which.
Sure.
She's quite good at looking badass, so I'll be interested to see how she plays different characters. Mm. She's always got a bit of sass about her.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you had watched Amazon's Utopia, correct?
Mm.
Cancelled.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Too close?
Look, I think it's a combination of it maybe didn't have the impact it wanted. It took 8 years for that first series to actually happen.
Sure.
And yes, of just it's way too close to what's been going on at the moment, and yep. No one wants to spend time in that.
As I said to you, I could only watch an episode at a time, and then I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah, I think it's both the subject matter about a pandemic and then also all the fake news and eugenics and, you know, all the bullshit right-wing stuff that can be extrapolated with what's actually
conspiracy theories out there.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's a shame. The US version was nowhere near as good as the UK version from all accounts. I only watched the first episode and I was like, nah, I'm not watching this now.
Yeah, right, okay.
The UK one messed me up, and that was years before the pandemic. I'm not watching another one during.
Yeah, that makes total sense. This is interesting. Felicity Huffman. So she went to
jail?
Was it last year, I think? All part of that college admission scandal thing.
Yes, her and other.
Aunt Becky.
Yeah, from Fuller House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. I think she might be in at the moment, where Felicity kind of just went in and out again pretty quickly. But in the world of casting and mainly TV, casting directors have been going for Felicity Huffman. I think they want to ride the scandal publicity coattails on this one.
Well, she gets to, you know, every few years there's someone that has a bit of a resurrection. We've seen Matthew McConaughey go through it. Vince Vaughn is currently going through one at the moment, this sort of stuff.
Yep.
And that's a perfect redemption story.
It's all about her. Yeah, and so she's been cast in a comedy for the US ABC network.
Mm-hmm.
It's inspired by a lady called Susan Savage. So she'll be playing Susan Savage, who was the real-life owner of a baseball team called the Sacramento River Cats. And the reason she was the owner was because her husband owned it and he died suddenly, and suddenly she was like the boss. And it's all about that and her family. Be interesting to see how they make it a comedy based on that. But, you know, other comedies have existed with a pretty...
Where is the team?
Sacramento. So that's in California, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sort of going... It's north of LA, that's for sure. Maybe inland a bit.
I think, I don't know, that's weird because, like, you know, if you do it as Texas or somewhere like that, then it's the fish out of water and she was maybe a trophy wife who wasn't interested in sports. But if it's in Sacramento, that implies that, you know.
She may have her act together or feel comfortable at least within that world.
And they're a lot more progressive in terms of the players and their thinking and stuff, so it wouldn't be there's a woman in charge now.
But I wonder if it was set back in the 80s or something.
Sure, whether it's a flashback type thing.
Yeah, so maybe they could take that kind of storyline route with the players. Mullets. Of course, now I'm just thinking about one of your all-time number one tip-top favourite Netflix productions with the baseball players.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched that again the other day.
Did you?
Yeah, Bash Brothers.
Good fun?
All the time. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned flashback type shows. There's a sitcom coming next year called Young Rock.
Hmm.
It is an autobiography type show about The Rock. And it's the same showrunner as Fresh Off the Boat, which you know I loved.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be one of those really sweet that's a multicam, family sitcom. There's conflicting reports about exactly how the show is formatted. The Rock is in every episode, if not most episodes.
Right.
But the year is 2032. He is either running for or is the current president.
Amazing.
And he's sitting down with an interview to talk about his formative years. And so the show has a kid that plays him at age 10, another at 15, and a guy at 21. And they've already shown off some photos of when he's 10. His dad was a famous wrestler.
Yeah.
And so the cast members of the show, there's a bunch of people that are playing Andre the Giant or the Junkyard Dog or all these amazing, super popular, larger-than-life characters from wrestling in the 80s and stuff.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
As soon as you said, The Rock, it reminded me of that Chris Rock show. I think we've spoken about this.
Everybody Loves Chris?
Yeah.
No, Everybody Hates Chris.
Everybody Hates
Him? Because Everybody Loves Raymond.
And that guy, yeah, that's right. And that actor ended up being in The Walking Dead for
Correct.
A little bit.
And he got ripped apart in a revolving door. Yeah. I still see that any time I walk up to a revolving door.
Revolting door, more like.
But the part I haven't mentioned, probably buried the lead here, they've been filming that in Queensland.
Oh, really?
Yep, their main HQ is in Brisbane. They also film a bit down at Gold Coast and stuff because there's a lot of Samoan and, Islander blokes that are involved in the show.
Well, that's worked out well because, the fact that Queensland and, most of Australia is coping quite well with COVID at the moment.
Yep.
So they're able to continue their production.
So The Rock is filming his parts in the States.
Yep.
He's not over here for production, but apparently he's Zooming most days with them and this sort of stuff. And, he put out a post on Instagram the other day congratulating them on their COVID bubble that they've been able to go with production and this sort of stuff. And we're in a really good place here.
Yeah.
I expect we're going to see more and more productions come down here in New Zealand and things like that. Because, even The Flash this week, someone's got COVID. So it's been paused for two weeks.
Oh, no, that sucks. Stuff.
It's going to happen more and more with different shows. I don't even bother making notes. I don't bother making notes on who's paused now because it's just going to happen all the time.
I think the Batman it's happened a couple of times.
Yep.
I think at least twice that I remember since they've started up again, I mean. My final news story is Neil Gaiman's book, The Sleeper and the Spindle, is getting a radio adaptation or a radio serial version on BBC Radio 4.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have Gwendolyn Christie. She's going to play the main character. And a sort of a mix of Snow White and Sleeping Beauty. It's about a soldier queen, played by Gwendolyn Christie, who is preparing for her wedding day. But instead, she has to suddenly go on an adventure to save the land from a sleeping sickness. Hence the thing. So I actually haven't read – I've read a few Neil Gaiman books, and they're always quite enjoyable. I haven't read this one, so now I'm wondering whether to hold off and have a listen to the radio adaptation. I'm sure we'll be able to get our hands on it at some point. But, yeah, they're planning to have that happen. I don't know if they're doing it live or not, around Christmas.
Nice.
Over in the UK. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that story.
Neil Gaiman, I find him very hit or miss. I either love his stuff or it's too whimsical. To Douglas Adams.
Sure. The one I probably liked the most of his was the Norseman story, like the Norse gods.
Sure.
And it was basically just him explaining Norse gods. So it wasn't so much a storyline. It was more, like a historical look on the mythology of that. That was really interesting.
Look, I really enjoyed Good Omens.
Good Omens. Stardust, did you?
Yeah.
That one was pretty
fun. I interviewed, what's his name?
Oh, from the movie.
Ben, the kid, the main guy in that. No,
what's his name?
Who was on Westworld. His name is Ben. He was also
in Claire Danes in that movie?
Maybe.
I forget how – it was a while ago, wasn't it?
I think he was also in Prince Caspian. But, he was
– Charlie Cox.
No, not Charlie Cox.
Wait. Ben Barnes.
That's it, Ben Barnes. That's my boy. Yeah, so he was the bad guy in Punisher. And he was great. Got a lot of time for that guy. Lovely interview.
Where's he from?
England.
Okay. Yeah, right. Born in London.
Stardust, I think that was his first film.
Oh, okay.
Well, it was his breakout role anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He looks like he could have been in Game of Thrones.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And I've got mad respect for him because he started out in a lot of these kids' fantasy films and could have been locked in there. And then if you look at the stuff that he's done, he makes really bold, interesting choices, like a Robert Pattinson. I've got this beautiful look. People find me very desirable. I'm going to go on Punisher and play a guy who gets horribly disfigured.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Good on him. It just means that he can continue to do what he likes. If you start that, I feel like in Hollywood, if you start that trend, people tend to offer you different stuff.
Yeah. It's very rare that you get, like, here's what you would consider an archetype leading man.
Yep.
He's got that look, the chiseled jaw. He holds himself straight and you look at him and you think, I could follow.
Mm.
That. It's very rare that that person chooses to be a character actor.
Yeah.
You get, you know, Shia LaBeouf is a little bit in that way. He can lean more comical and this sort of stuff, but just that traditional good looking guy to be able to do the character roles, very cool. All right, I got two more news stories for you. Smash them through quick. One, I've been waiting a long time for Godzilla vs. Kong because that was meant to happen earlier this year and they've been teasing it for like 4 years now and I just want to see this new giant Kong from Kong Skull Island.
Potentially next year? When? Who knows?
Well, apparently they're going to give it to streaming because nothing's happening. So Netflix offered $200 million and they knocked it back. Probably because HBO Max want it and it technically exists within their corporate structure somehow.
Okay.
So they've got leverage to be able to go, nah, you can't do that.
Sure.
So they may not get that $200 million from HBO Max, but I'm sure they'd get a lot more free promotion or something along the lines there. So stay tuned. That may come through a lot quicker than expected.
Exciting. Yeah. A lot of people would be keen to catch that one.
Yeah, I think over the next few weeks, we're going to see a lot more films announced for dates next year on streaming.
Yeah.
Because this pandemic is not going away in the States. The vaccine would be lovely, but no one knows when that will hit. No one knows how long it's going to take.
Or how effective at this point.
Yeah.
Just don't know.
And so there's a lot of studios that just need to make some money.
Sure.
And we'll get that stuff going, which is great. And I'm going to end on a cheery note.
Okay, great.
For the news. So Mariah Carey has a Christmas special happening 4th of December, I believe, for Apple Plus.
Okay.
It's called Mariah Carey's Magical Christmas Special.
Well, I already know someone who'll be watching it. That's Lynn's, right?
Correct. She's been sending me every trailer and everything. She's very excited because some of the people featured is Mariah's new best friend, Billy Eichner.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was amazing.
It's a Merry Christmas. Oh, he's going to be so angry about things. Yeah. Ariana Grande.
Oh, cool.
Which she's Mariah's protege.
Yeah.
You know, if anyone can steal the crown of the high warbly voice, it's Ariana.
Yeah.
And Snoop's in there, Jermaine Dupri. There's a lot of 90s vibe
R&B. That's what you want.
Yes.
Please sing all of the songs.
I know. And there are several shots of her laying on her left on a chaise
on her
lounge.
Best side.
The only side.
Yeah.
She refuses to be filmed unless she's on that
wild,
side.
It's wild, right?
What a diva.
No one else really would notice, but sure, she does. I'm just wondering, what are the chances of a Snoop Dogg version of White Christmas?
Well, Snoop has done a song with her for the soundtrack. There'll be a soundtrack
amazing
releasing along with it. Now, they've done songs in the past, but a Christmas theme thing. Snoop, I mean, how Snoop doesn't have an album out of called like I'm Dreaming of a Green Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
It's money left on the table,
and like,
Snoop.
Him wearing a green cardigan, like Bing Crosby style.
I could, sitting in front of a fireplace.
Yes.
With a pipe going, but not a pipe. His pipe.
Yeah, that's right. Do you reckon there could be a recreation? I can't think of what the song was, but I'm like on a Bing Crosby thing right now. But he did a song with David Bowie. It was a Christmas song, and they're like wandering around a set which is designed to look like a cozy Christmas house. And I think they're both wearing like the cardigan sort of outfit. I would love to see Snoop and somebody else, I don't know who, do that for Mariah Carey's special.
Andy Samberg.
If I can have a Christmas wish, could I have that happen?
Sure, and especially because I think Andy Samberg's Jewish, so he wouldn't give a shit. He'd just be involved.
That'd be amazing. Oh, my God, I would love all of that.
I don't know how Snoop doesn't have a Christmas special yet. Bill Murray did one a few years ago. He had some big stars.
That was a good
one.
A
George Clooney and stuff. And that was a slightly serious tone, but
it
Bill Murray undercutting.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Then you had Michael Bolton's one.
I do not remember that. Was it good?
That is worth your time.
Is it Netflix or?
It is on Netflix.
Okay, I'm gonna watch
it. It is produced by the Funny or Die people.
Oh,
I think.
Great!
A lot of Comedy Bang Bang people involved.
Amazing!
In it
right.
It's out there. And like that's where everyone went, oh, Bolton's funny. And that's why he's in on it. He keeps working with Lonely Island and all this sort of stuff. They've done many songs together. So Mariah's bringing in this one. I don't think there's going to be a lot of self-deprecating humor. I don't see there being a ton of humor through it. I think it's going to be a good spirited thing. I don't think this will be funny. So they need to come in hard next year with Snoop's holiday special.
Oh.
And maybe instead of just being a Christmas show, he can get Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, get them all in there.
Kind of like that nailed it Christmas or holiday special, they call it. And each episode was, a different
thing. What's the Seinfeld Festivus?
Oh, Festivus.
There's that. And then on the OC, they had Chris Monica, I think it was called.
Chris Monica, that's great.
Something like that. Might be Hanumus. I can't remember.
Hanumus.
I don't think it was Hanumus.
Still waiting outside a pizzeria for Fry to return? You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Hey, guess what time it is?
I'm hoping it's the time for the Tom Appreciation.
You're not going to be able to do this theme song because this theme song is themed to this person's music.
Okay, go for it. I'm just going to enjoy.
I better stop there or we'll get in trouble. Tom Morello this week. We're talking about Tom Morello, guitarist for Rage Against the Machine.
I never would have guessed that one.
No, I know. So yeah, he's a dude and he's like super duper smart on societal justice. Like,
they are, but he's
like mega PhD level.
Oh, holy cow, right.
Yeah, so I love it because people give him shit on social media. He puts something out and someone's like, maybe just stick to music and stop doing the political stuff. He's like, well, you'd probably need a doctorate in political science to be able to explain this. So it's handy that I have a doctorate in political science to explain this. He had a solo album out. I think it was last year that was dancey stuff with him playing guitar over the top. It's been pretty good.
Mixing it all up.
Yeah. So I've been enjoying I've needed a bit of a fire up. So I've been going back to the old Rage Against the Machine, remembering some of that teenage rage, not angst. It's not angst.
No.
It's not corn.
No. It's not
woe
angst.
Is me stuff. It's
no,
the,
this
how
is.
How fucked is the world?
Let's do something about it.
And I've been saying for the last 4 years, God damn it, come back, Rage Against the Machine.
Yep.
Zach De La Rocca has done a couple of songs with Run the Jewels, and that's just like, run them jewels fast, run them jewels fast. It just says stuff that they use for a chorus and then doesn't rap. I say,
do it properly.
Zach,
do what
we
the
need
want.
You.
Rage Against the Machine, obviously, whenever I think about them, I have flashbacks to the early 90s, mm-hmm. obviously. Mm-hmm. But I also have flashbacks to, when would it be? Maybe the late 90s with GTAs. GTA, San Andreas maybe. And you're just driving around and you'd have the rock station on and do. Yep, and that's all I'm going to say of that one. But, it's amazing how songs can have that power where they can transport you way back in time to a very specific moment.
Mm.
And that song manages to transport me back to two different times to very specific feelings. You know how each different era of your life has a feeling?
Yeah,
there's
sure.
a vibe in it. And both of them are quite nice vibes. So when I think about it, I'm like,
oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. When I went to Wall Street, I had to get a photo of where they did the music video
that's
for Testify.
Cool. Or that's cool.
You know, they're cool. Yeah. So he's popped up in lots of movies and TV shows and stuff over the years.
Yeah, right.
You'd have seen him and stuff and probably not even realized it was
him. I don't
think
he's
been buried under prosthetics or worn funny costumes and
so
stuff.
Fun.
He's tight with a lot of people. He's got cool stories. And he does the name Tom well. So thank you, Tom Morello.
Thank you, Tom.
And we're going to wrap up the down, wow, 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 Tom appreciation, wow, 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 such a segment.
That was a good bit at the end. How about a watching suggestion segment then?
Yeah.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
How good was The Mandalorian?
It was good.
I did not hear anybody on any of the social medias, even the worst ones where people like to be angry about everything. I didn't hear anybody complaining about Rosario Dawson's portrayal.
I saw both IGN and AV Club gave it the episode a perfect score.
Wow.
And it's kind of deserved because So we have friends of the show who love their Star Wars Rebels or love their Clone Wars and stuff.
For
and
sure.
This episode was for them.
Yep.
I mean, it was for everyone to enjoy, but it tied together so many plots and storylines and things. And, you know, the mention of the name Thrawn is hugely exciting. I don't know if that registered for you at all. Admiral Thrawn is one of the very, very big bads from the comics and the books and the expanded universe stuff. He is a very different type of villain to a Sith, but he's awesome.
So he was the master.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Blue-skinned That's alien. Cool. If you want to go and look into his stuff, do. But otherwise, it sounds like he's coming, so stay tuned.
Need
to go and spoil things for yourself there.
And you also said we had lots of storylines, you know, wrapping back around or opening up. And even within The Mandalorian, you had storylines opening up again, which was really
very
cool.
Much so. Well, it feels like there's almost like a closing on the chapter of him trying to find someone to give the child to. You know, that like he's been accepting maybe of a little bit more fatherhood. Kid's got a name.
Yep.
No one's going to use that name.
No. But it's nice.
Grogu.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. That's in it. Your baby, you're the child. That's who you are.
Yeah, that's you.
Michael Biehn was the magistrate's offsider, which was awesome. There was some shots in there that kind of recreated some of the first shots in Terminator.
Oh, I didn't even notice. This is an episode I am going to go back and watch soon.
I watched it twice, and yeah, there's a few shots there because he was Kyle Reese. Mm. There's a couple of shots there that really recreate some of the stances and everything that character made in Terminator.
Okay, I'm 100% going to have to. Do you know what I liked about it? And I know that we've spoken about the fact that The Mandalorian is wonderful because it's not all about Jedis and stuff. God damn, did it feel good.
To have some lightsabers out there?
Yes.
Well, I'd say I'm on the flip of that. I love that they had a Beskar pole, that pole arm. So the woman fighting, I've forgotten her name, but I think she might be, it's not Bruce Lee, but it's another martial artist, like very famous person's granddaughter or something
Amazing.
Like that. And so she is a trainer of people in Hollywood. She's worked with Scarlett Johansson to train Black Widow and all this sort of stuff. So that's why you don't recognize her face. But once you see her start moving, it reminds you of all these other fighters that you've seen because she trained them.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense because I think around the time that the episode came out, I was on Twitter or Instagram or something and her account showed up. And I was like, oh, she's in the episode, cool. And I was just kind of scrolling through and there were pictures of Bruce Lee and that kind of thing. So that's all you've connected it all to me for me, which is great. She was good. I'm hoping we see her again.
Well, we didn't see a body.
We didn't see
Likewise, we didn't see the body of Michael Biehn's character.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he looked more dead than she
He did look more dead.
Would have. I liked her. I loved her droid.
I was about to say those two droids were scrap great. Metal droids.
They were super creepy, weren't they?
Yeah. It feels like they came from a different effects house. You know, they feel like the masks on the droid specifically felt like something Tom Savini or Greg Nicotero a horror person would do rather than the Star Wars universe stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. I thought that the whole world that they were on, like this was so, I mean, all of Mandalorian's beautiful, but I thought this was beautiful.
Well, it's a different vibe. It wasn't the spaghetti Western this week. It was straight up Kurosawa. It was shouting out old samurai, like this is a samurai thing.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Also, I don't know if you saw people trying to guess where the old Jedi temple, where that is that he will take the kid to.
Yeah.
Grogu, I was trying to think. And already people were like, oh, it must be from the game Jedi Order, whatever the last Star Wars game was. They're like,
it could be that. It could be the temple that Rey goes to
The second one?
The island that Luke's hiding out of.
Yep.
I don't think they can bring Luke in at this point. Who they would have play young Mark Hamill, I don't know. I mean, sorry, we already know that's Sebastian Stan, the guy that plays Winter Soldier. Because if you look at a photo of him, he is Mark Hamill pre-car crash.
Yep.
But I feel like we would know if that was happening.
That would be a thing.
That's a big thing. So yeah, Mando.
Oh. I loved it. It was so good, and I'm going to have to watch it again this week in the lead up to next episode. So good. What else have you been watching?
So I watched a bit of an odd one, and I've had this on my list of got to watch this for 2 or 3 weeks now. But there's an Australian drum and bass group called Pendulum that I love, and they've been around for quite a long time. But they mainly live over in the UK. They were Pendulum. They stopped being Pendulum. They became Knife Party for a while. They've now gone back to Pendulum. Now, like every other band in 2020, they're struggling because they can't go and play gigs.
Mm.
And like many other bands, they started doing the live streaming gig. And they did one that was, you know, just DJing in a rented space. And it was cool. They had some cool lights and stuff. And they were like, we're going to do another one of these. Stay tuned. So they put out a 1 hour live show maybe a month ago now. It's called Pendulum at Spitbank Fort. And I'm like, Spitbank Fort, I know that. Where's that? And I started watching in Portsmouth, where Lynn's used to live and stuff over in the UK. There's a fort 100 metres off the coast that a tiny hotel is on with a lighthouse.
Yeah, right.
And you can rent it for a wedding and things like that. Nah, fuck that. They rented it, booked it out completely. In the pouring rain, do a gig standing underneath the lighthouse, drones circling the island, pyrotechnics, wow, light displays, everything. It was awesome.
How long was it?
So it was an hour show.
Awesome.
They clearly had recorded a bit longer and edited some stuff down and stuff. And there were parts where it rains, and a lot of the time it's just the water getting hit from the waves crashing on the island.
How
and
cool.
Stuff. It was one of the most atmospheric things I can remember seeing.
Great idea.
Yeah. Just such a twist on the, okay, we can't, no crowd.
Yep.
You know, no one other than the three guys in the band.
And some drones.
That you can see. And people flying drones and a couple of camera people further away and stuff. But, yeah. And their singer, who's also their main writer, Rob, he's notoriously shy. When they play live, he plays guitar and he just stares at his keys and like
hides behind the mic.
Beautiful singer, gorgeous voice, very little stage presence. Sure. He likes to write music and this sort of stuff. So he used to do some of the talking and he was awful at it. And now he just makes one of the other guys do the talking. And he's not good at it either.
Sounds fair.
But whatever. But because there was no crowd, he relaxed.
Oh, right.
And when he sung, you could see him swaying and he smiled and you could see him having a good time. And it's, you know, when you see an artist grow, and it was one of those moments of like.
I wonder if that is the kind of studio version of himself.
I think so.
In the studio, being able to create and really just be in the music.
Yep. So this was all really cool, and I'm like, I'm sure that's Portsmouth, and then the camera pans a certain way. I'm like, oh, there's bloody Gun Wharf, and that weird shaped sail tower. And so I then let Linz's friends know of this being a thing, and one of them was like, oh, that's that sound, all that music we heard the other day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And so then they would have gone on to watch it as well.
Yeah, and it was like full on drum and bass, dubstep, heavy.
I think probably an hour is enough for a show.
Yes. It's but different if you're at a concert.
Yeah,
concert,
if you're at it longer, yeah. But I think an hour is probably the sweet spot there.
Yep.
That's cool. So how are you watching it?
It was just on free on YouTube.
Oh, cool.
I mean, if you've got YouTube Premium or Red or whatever like that, there's no ads that show up. So there was an ad, I think, every 10 minutes through or something like that. Whatever. But, yeah, just put it out free.
That's awesome.
Because you get a lot of bands are doing these shows and it's, you know, $10, $20 cover charge or whatever to get in and get the link, and comedians are doing that and stuff too.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool that these guys are just saying, oh, fuck it. We want to rent an expensive island, spend a lot of money on production.
It sounds like it was
and put it out
not
for free.
Cheap. Well, hopefully people won't skip through those ads.
Flamethrowers, fireworks, light displays. Yeah.
That sounds amazing. I'm going to check out a little bit of it. I think I really need to. I've been watching a show on Netflix mainly because of the name. It was called We Are the Champions.
I saw that listed. I did not watch.
Of course I needed to, because everybody's a good champ, right?
We are pro champs here at We Are the Watchers.
That's right. We certainly are. And the first episode probably has been my favourite so far, but I've been having a cheeky peek at some of the upcoming episodes.
So give us the premise of this show.
So each episode is different.
Mm-hmm.
So the first episode was all about the cheese rolling. competition.
Yes. Okay, yes.
In the UK.
Was that the one that this year they just someone pegged a baby bell down because they can't do it?
Did they?
Yeah, there were like someone tweeted on the official account from that event that this year, because we can't be doing it, we've ceremoniously thrown a baby bell down.
That's so good. It's great. They follow a couple of people. Two of them have won before in the past. And the hilarious thing is, so the guy that they were following, he was the champion the most. Like he no one has.
You'd say he's the Gouda.
He's the Gouda. Yeah, he's the.
He's the big cheese.
There we go. Anyway, he wasn't going to be able to compete in this year's. Well, last year's, but you get what I mean, because his wife had booked a holiday. He'd paid the deposit and then realized.
Wife? He's a champion.
So of course she did that on purpose, right? Of course. So he couldn't defend his title, but he had a niece who was 17 and was a bit keen on giving it a go, so he was training her up. She didn't go too badly. Mm. I won't give too much away, but other people get very injured, as you can imagine.
Yeah, it looks like it really hurts.
Very injured.
Just fling yourself down a hill, right?
Yeah, that's all it is.
And fuck the cheese.
There are a few techniques. Yeah, you're not actually going for the cheese, but you get the cheese at the end. Like, that's your prize. Hold up the big wheel of cheese.
Right.
I'm the cheese man. The second episode, not too bad. It was about chili eating competitions. That was okay. But I kind of like the cheese one a bit more. But there's one that I'm really excited for later, yo-yo. You know there's going to be some amazing moves in that one.
My dad claims he was a yo-yo state champion.
No way.
Yep.
He could walk the dog and do all the things.
He can still do some of the tricks and stuff, but he's...
That's cool.
Yep. He claims that he used to go around to schools doing demonstrations. I don't know if I believe it.
So back in the day, I think Coca-Cola got heavily invested in the yo-yo world. So heaps of people will remember their yo-yos were either Fanta yo-yos, Sprite yo-yos.
Fuck yeah.
Because they were like, let's get in on that. Yeah. So I wonder if your dad was...
Pusher.
Yeah, maybe he was, without knowing. He was like, man, I'm just here for the yo-yos.
I'm just here to walk it.
And others are like, I'm here for this icy coke. Yeah, I think there's only six episodes. There's not that many, but
That's just enough champions, I think.
It's just enough champions.
You don't want to go into too many weird niche sports at once.
No. Do you know what isn't in there? That wife carrying competition. So I'm expecting that's going to be the next season if they get one.
Is curling in there?
No.
That's got to be in there because the rest of the world looks at curling and goes, the fuck is that?
What is that?
Axe throwing, is that in there?
No, but there is dog dancing competitions.
A dog
where you dance with your dog.
Oh, get fucked.
There's frog jumping. I'm a bit excited about that one too.
Sure. What about like make-believe horse riding? Have you seen those ones?
Yes, I've seen that. It's not in there, but they are brilliant.
They go for it.
They are people who never wanted to let go of that fun.
No.
And if they're happy, I'm not going to judge.
I say they nay.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten to watch it yet, but there's a show coming called How To with John Wilson. Now, I've brought this up to you before because it's executive produced by Nathan Fielder.
Mm.
And this show is a first-person POV. So, it's someone looks like someone strapped a GoPro to their head. And this guy, John Wilson, goes out and observes the world and comments on what he sees and this sort of stuff. So they've put out a behind-the-scenes featurette for it with Nathan. And it starts off with Nathan talking about why he wanted to work with John and that he'd found him and was championing. And, you know, he asked John to put together a demo reel. And John filmed for the demo reel – it's really hard to explain, but this guy had a job where his job was to notice things that were wrong in shots.
Yeah, right.
For a long time.
Almost like a continuity kind of thing. Almost.
He was a continuity guy. So you strap a camera to him and he goes out into the world and he finds weird shit and stuff that you just walk past and don't notice.
Because he's trained his brain to look.
So his demo reel was like a 2-minute clip of this guy standing on the subway with a bag of bread who had tied the bread to the handrail. And John talks about it and then does voiceover how this guy made him so apprehensive and nervous because what happens if they get to their stop and he can't get the bread untied in time? And that's all it is. So it cuts back to Nathan, and Nathan's like, so I decided it was time to start diversifying because you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. And then Nathan somehow takes over this behind-the-scenes feature of what's meant to be on this other guy's show that he's promoting. And Nathan's bought a house, like a mansion, and he's got teenage TikTok boys.
Okay.
That he's put on a strict diet and, right. and he produces dance video content for TikTok.
Amazing.
And he started a cult. His kids aren't allowed to contact their parents.
Wild.
They're only allowed to eat what he says. And that's the first 4 minutes of this like 9-10 minute clip.
You just have to go with it, right?
He couldn't help himself. He turned it into another Nathan For You episode. And it's this weird, like, it keeps cutting back to John Wilson talking about his show and how excited he is to have Nathan on board. And by this point, Nathan is not interested in him at all. And he's just putting all his eggs in the basket of these teenage dancing
teens. Yeah, he'd moved on. That's hilarious.
It's so funny.
But I'm also a little bit worried about that bread now as well.
Oh, and the bread thing escalates. He gets way too caught up in filming bread stuff, like abandoned croissants and all this. The show is going to be weird enough, this thing. I have a feeling it's going to be exactly halfway between Nathan For You and Joe Pera Talks To You, which means it's going to be my jam.
It's like they've tailor-made this show just for you.
It's on HBO Max, which means it's a bit more difficult to get to at this stage, but it won't be there for long.
You can wait.
Holy fuck.
What was it called again?
So the show is called How To with John Wilson.
Okay.
And the behind-the-scenes feature, Nathan just takes over. And so a lot of Nathan's stunts were always just silly, but every now and then he did one that felt genuinely scary of you've crossed a line and people are going to interpret this wrong.
Yeah, right.
So he had one episode where he was a magician and he was put in a straitjacket and he had to get himself out before in less than 90 seconds or a robot pulley system that he designed would dack him. He'd pull his pants down in front of these preteens.
Yeah, that's...
And he'd become a sex offender.
All sorts
and
of wrong.
He'd arranged for cops to be there monitoring the situation. Goodness. All this sort of stuff. So it really escalates to feeling dangerous.
There's a lot going on.
That's what this felt like of like, dude, you're implying that you're like stealing 16-year-old boys, that you visit them at night.
TikTok.
That you sneak in at night and check that they're not eating and having midnight snacks and see if they need cuddles. Like, it's just so... Oh!
Yikes.
It was great. It was great.
Because it made you uncomfortable and it was so out there and bizarre.
And the character of Nathan is oblivious because his whole deal is that he doesn't get social cues so that he doesn't see why this is all so wrong.
Yeah, right.
He just sees it as a great marketing opportunity.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing.
Yep.
That's so bizarre. Yep. I love it.
Yep. So weird.
Where we're going, we don't need roads. Unless you're listening to this in your car or on a bus or... Hang on, we actually really do need roads. Guys, can we get some roads?
Hey, Tom.
Yes.
So I've got a bit of a confession.
Oh, what's that, R. Kelly?
Please don't call me R. Kelly. Is it funny? Usher. R. Kelly is now like, hey, come on. I'm not that bad.
I know. For a while there, it was like, ha, 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 R. Kelly pisses on people. And then it was like, no, R. Kelly is an awful person. That's a weird segue to go from Nathan grooming boys into R. Kelly.
There's a subliminal
Were we going with this before I derailed?
My confession. That's right. I've got a confession.
Yes.
I only watched half of The Walking Dead: Well Beyond.
Well, look, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but that second half is the best episode it's had yet.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Fantastic.
So I'm not going to spoil things, but I was very impressed with where the season ended, and it actually made me quite excited for this second season to see where it goes. The show has played cagey with some of its secrets for far too long, and then it revealed a few of them, and one of them's like, I don't know if that was a secret or something you just decided to do like last week and you've written into the show.
All right, okay.
Because that's a serious left swerve.
Okay.
But some of the other stuff, like there's some wonderful payoff for Silas, the very angsty big fella.
Isn't he Aussie? I think the actor's Aussie.
Yeah. He gets a real nice payoff.
Awesome.
For where his storyline's been going. And the kid that plays Elton.
I like him.
He's awesome. Mm. And he really steps up to the plate in that last episode.
Mm.
Goes through some weird stuff.
Yeah, he was having a chat with someone who wasn't very well. I like that.
His character reminds me a lot of Hurley from Lost, the happy-go-lucky right, guy yeah. that everyone looks to for support, but yeah. is actually pretty fragile inside yeah. himself.
Having a struggle.
Yeah, and awesome action sequence that you haven't got okay. to yet. Like an act-long fight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like some superhero-level shit.
I'm trying to imagine what that could be.
It just goes bonkers. It goes really off the rails in a great way. And it kind of reminds me of when Fear the Walking Dead finally lent into the pulpy nature and got, like was like, yeah, we'll be silly. We're not going to be Z Nation silly, but we'll be a bit more silly and stuff, you know. Yeah. There's a zombie hurricane or things like that. It's not at that level, but there's some...
It's a long outline.
It just leans into it more than sitting around mopey 16-year-olds and stuff.
It had to go somewhere, right?
Yep.
It had to. Oh, that's awesome. So after that, now we've got a fair wait, right, for Walking Dead
yeah,
stuff.
So there'll be those six episodes of actual Walking Dead at some point, which are the individual storylines. Fear will come back for the second half of their season.
They'll be after those six episodes,
I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then World Beyond, I don't know if they've even started making season two
yet. I haven't heard. Awesome. Are you ready for a quiz?
I am.
This quiz was inspired by that Neil Gaiman radio serial I was talking about. So it's about fairy tales.
Okay. You might be about to learn one of my glaring holes. Oh, that came out wrong.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right, we'll see. Because
I tailor these to you.
I know. But people always assume that I'm really into my fantasy.
Okay, let's see.
Let's see.
There's elements of Disney in here. That's why I feel a bit confident.
I always stress on these things and then I do fine. It'll be all good. But I just mean people make a lot of assumptions onto the fantasy.
He knows everything.
Yeah, I haven't read Discworld. I don't have time for Terry Pratchett. I read a lot of comics. I don't have time for as many books as I used to.
There's only a certain amount of hours in every day.
Oh, God, I've been building like a giant Lego Mickey and Minnie and you know, I've got
Seen those. Like, I think you showed me, not the ones you're making, but what
they're rad.
Yeah, I bet they are. Okay, question number one. Which century was Beauty and the Beast written in? So you just have to pick a century.
Wasn't it George R. R. Martin?
No, it's just that it feels like he's been trying to write stuff for centuries.
Oh, no, one of his first writing gigs, I think, was doing Punch-Up on the Disney Beauty and the Beast. But no, you're talking about
the original
folk tale story. I'm going to say 18th century.
1740. France? It was written by a French lady. Her name is Gabrielle Suzanne Badol de Villevue, potentially.
Sure.
Not very good at French. But it was based on a real story as well.
Of course it was. That famous true story about a man being transformed into a beast.
That's right. Yeah, we all know. We all knew that was true. So there you go. You got that correct. Congratulations.
Thank you. What elements of the story are purported to be correct and true?
So a lady...
Was there a talking fucking candelabra?
A lady did marry a bloke who was quite well off.
Yeah.
And he had that I don't know if it's like a gene defect or whatever, but it makes you grow hair where you shouldn't.
Oh, like the I think it's called like werewolf.
Something like that. So he had that and she had been organized to marry him but didn't meet him till the day of the marriage.
Oh.
So she was like, what? Anyway, they lived happily ever after. They had quite a few kids.
Okay.
So
all right. So that sounds very reasonable.
It's a reasonable story.
Yeah.
But I don't know about the candelabra though. Who played the brothers in Brothers Grimm, the movie? I'd say this movie's about...
I'm going to say one of them is Matt Damon.
Yep.
And the other one is Greg Kinnear? No.
Aussie.
Hugh Jackman.
The other H, the other H.
Hemsworth?
Dead.
Ah, oh, Heath Ledger.
Yeah, Heath Ledger. Hmm.
I never saw that movie.
Wasn't bad.
Yeah? Why did I think Greg Kinnear?
It's that era.
But didn't he and Matt Damon do a film where they were conjoined twins?
Yep, that's what it is.
Why did you give that film? That's like not that. This. Okay, nothing sorry, you like said that. Brothers Grimm, and I thought,
you were like, oh, it must be the Siamese twins. This is exactly what it is. It's the ancient story of. How many years did Sleeping Beauty sleep for?
42.
Hang on, is that the answer to the
that's
meaning
of life?
Yeah. No, 100 years.
Okay.
100.
So anyone alive when she went to sleep is dead.
Yeah.
What a horrific world to wake up to.
That's why Gwendolyn Christie is going to try and save the day from that terrible sleeping problem.
Fuck, that would, yeah. That's not fun,
right?
The beginning of Walking Dead.
It's got a touch of Futurama about it too.
Sure. Oh, that episode with the dog.
Oh, no, I can't.
Yeah, let's not.
I just can't. Where do they reckon Cinderella originally came from? It's multiple choice. It's double choice, dual choice. Greece or China?
China.
Did you answer that just so you could say that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was the answer.
Give you points. No, it's not. They reckon Greece back in the 6th century, about a Greek courtesan had one of her shoes stolen by an eagle who flies all the way across the Mediterranean, drops it in the lap of an Egyptian king. But China was part of this, in fact, the 9th century, so not that far off. They also had a story called Yi Xiang, I think, in which a young girl named Yi Xiang is granted one wish from a bunch of magical fish bones, and she uses it to create a gown in hopes of finding a husband.
Huh.
And you know that those two authors hadn't had a chat beforehand.
No.
So it's interesting that it sounds like those two stories have molded together and ended up in Europe, where someone's come up with Cinderella. It's cool the way folklore and folk stories work.
Well, there's only two actual stories. There's a man comes to town, or a hero heads out on a journey.
Yep. That's Star Wars, right?
Yep.
It's every Star Wars.
Every Western culture story boils back to that.
Yep.
Anyway,
I think we're at the last one.
Oh.
Oh, no, I forgot one.
Okay.
Who is Little Red Riding Hood off to see? You know, when the girl goes out on an adventure.
Grandmother.
Yeah, grandmother. Finally, who played Rapunzel in Disney's 2012 movie, Tangled?
Mandy Moore.
Oh, wow, you got that so fast.
I love that movie. Have you seen it?
Oh, it's like Grimm Brothers.
It holds up. It's a real two-parter with Frozen. Like, if you want to see the step Disney made to get to Frozen, start with Tangled.
Okay.
It's where Disney Studios was like, we can do grown up. We can make jokes for the parents in there and give it a lot more heart and emotion.
Yeah,
and that's a lot of people look at Tangled as kind of the beginning of the most recent Disney renaissance.
Yeah, it's the arc.
It's when they started copying Pixar. But yeah, Tangled is great, fantastic animal sidekick. Two of them, in fact. There's a great horse that hangs out with Flynn. And there's a chameleon.
That's right, the chameleon.
Yeah.
I get the name Tangled mixed up with that one that movie set in New
Enchantment,
York. Yes.
Which is amazing
as well. That's a great movie. I saw that being filmed. Didn't know what it was until a couple of years later.
Nice.
It was the dance sequence in Central Park, so it was recognisable.
Not going to sing it because we'll get in trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
I have those songs on my phone.
Sometimes for yourself or for Shay?
For Shay. Okay. But I enjoy them myself. There's a few straight jams in there.
Mm.
Before we sign off,
yes.
Arnie Donna Bing at Old House of Fun watched it one more time through this week. Do you know why? Because have been trying to get paid promotion with different people for years, and they inevitably end up calling them a C-word or something, and it tanks. But they've had a skit about trying to get Domino's on board, and somehow they got Domino's on board for a meal deal. So I ordered the Arnie Donna meal deal, which is just two pizzas, garlic bread, and a drink.
But that's all you need.
Bought it, and they're like, go on, watch the show and enjoy a pizza on us. I'm like, Well, I had to pay for it. But
yeah, yeah.
But I appreciate
they were part of the process. Did you see their interpretive interview? I think it was on ABC News, the 24-hour thing, where their answers were just interpretive dances.
Yep. I didn't see it, but that completely rings true.
It's really worth it.
They have been doing press for nearly a month straight, and they're clearly starting to unravel. It's awesome. Some of the stuff they've done over the last week is, even for them, very weird.
This is worth having a watch. I know that ABC News 24 tweeted, I'm pretty sure Auntie Donna retweeted it, and it's, please watch it. It's about 5-7 minutes long, and yeah. Awesome. Tom, on that note, thank you.
Now they're bored.